Recording in progress.
All right, welcome to the Atascadero City Council meeting of Tuesday, January 24th. I will call the meeting to order and ask Council Member Darris to lead us in a pledge to the flag.
Can you join me in the pledge? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Borbo.
Here.
Councilmember Darris.
Here.
Councilmember Newsom.
Heather, we don't have any sound on our side. We can't hear you.
Well, let's count that as a here, and we'll get that working.
Mayor Pro Tem Funk.
Here.
Mayor Moreno.
Here.
All present.
Thank you. Well, for those of you attending live, if you're listening on Zoom, on KPRL, on YouTube, all of the ways, we welcome you this evening. If you are listening and need to call in for public comment during community forum or any of the items that are listed on the agenda, we encourage you to do so. And let me go ahead and give you that number. Number one, it is on the front cover of our agenda. So if you go to atascadero.org, and go to council and agenda, you can pull that up and it's right there on the front page. But let me give that to you now. It's area code 669-900-6833. Again, 669-900-6833. When asked for the meeting ID, you will punch in 889-2347-9018. Again, 889-2347-9018. And when you do call in, you can let us know which item it is that you'd like to speak on. May I get a motion to approve the agenda?
Also move.
I'll second.
A motion by Councilmember Borbo, a second by Mayor Pro Tem Funk. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Borbo?
Yes.
Councilmember Darris?
Yes.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Funk?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno.
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
And I did fail to reiterate that we will waive the reading in full of all ordinances appearing on this agenda, and the titles of the ordinances will be read aloud by the city clerk at the first reading after the motion and before the council votes. My apologies. We move on to the consent calendar, which contains items that are considered to be routine and non-controversial and can be voted in one motion unless there's a member of the council or the public wishing to pull an item for discussion. Any of my colleagues wishing to pull an item?
A quick question on item 3.
Okay, and a question on item 3. Anyone else? All right, any members of the public, if you're on Zoom, you can go ahead and raise your hand if there's any item that you want to pull or comment on. I'm not seeing anyone at the moment. Mayor Pro Tem.
Sure. For the city manager, item 3 is our emergency purchases for the storm cleanup and emergency repairs. And I just wanted to confirm that it is that these would be, since we are considered a disaster, these would be considered reimbursable expenses by FEMA, and our intent would be to seek full reimbursement for those from the federal
government. Our intent absolutely is to seek reimbursement for those. We are eligible for everything on there. After going through several FEMA processes, I cannot promise that we will get reimbursed for all of that, but we will certainly make our case to do so.
Understood. That's why I asked about intent.
Thank you.
Thanks.
If anyone can make it happen, it is you. For those of you who don't know, Rochelle spearheaded the reconstruction of City Hall, which included FEMA, CCHC grants, and we came in $10 million under budget. I always like to reiterate that. Anyway, that does not belong under consent calendar. So any member of the public, now that that was brought up, A3, any comments, questions? I'm not seeing any, so we'll ask for a motion.
I'll move approval of the consent calendar.
I'll second.
A motion by Councilmember Borbo, second by Mayor Pro Tem Funk. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Borbo?
That's a yes.
Sorry. Councilmember Darris?
Yes.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Funk?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Thank you. I will now move on to updates from the city manager. Ms. Rickard.
Thank you, Mayor. As you can imagine, the first thing I want to talk about tonight is the storm and the relief information. I want to make sure that all of our residents, and in fact all the residents in the county, know about the relief that it was available. When we were here 2 weeks ago, we had not yet been declared a major disaster, which opened us up for individual assistance. We have since been, the disaster has been declared so. So there are a lot of things that are now available to businesses, residents, people that have suffered damage as a result of these storms. So today, SLO County Office of Emergency Services opened the Disaster Recovery Center. You'll hear a lot of talk about the DRC, that's Disaster Recovery Center, and a Local Assistance Center, or LAC. FEMA loves their acronym. So what it means is these are the places that you go for help. They're in San Luis Obispo, and they are there to provide a one-stop shop for residents who were affected by the storms. Residents can get help applying for federal assistance and disaster loans, update their application, and learn about other resources available. They can also connect with other agencies for immediate needs assistance for things like debris removal, removing damaged belonging and construction materials, or things that may present a health hazard. They have some specialties and some resources there for you. Both centers will be open 7 days a week, yes, every day, from 8 a.m. until 7 p.m., and they are located at the Veterans Memorial Building at 801 Grand Avenue in San Luis Obispo. In addition to the center, FEMA Disaster Survivor Assistance Teams are currently visiting neighborhoods impacted by the storm. You can also apply online for FEMA assistance at disasterassistance.gov, and they have a phone number. You can call 1-800-621-3362 anytime between 7 and 11 p.m. Luke, can you bring up the next slide? What I really want people just to know, because that's a lot of information, go to readyslo.org, readyslo.org. This is our county emergency website. It has a lot of information. When you go to that site, it's going to pull up this first page that says storm information. See where it says FEMA has approved individual assistance. Click on that. That's going to get you all the information on the DRC. It's going to have applications for you. It's going to tell you how you can get in touch with somebody that you can talk to, not just online. They have all the resources, and they're trying to get the information from anything from SBA loans and all of that here in one spot for people to get. We want to make sure our residents get help. So again, readyslo.org. You heard it a lot during COVID. Now it's the storms, readyslo.org. Please go there. Have a few more things to talk about. So we're going to talk about the general plan open house. So reminder, tomorrow, Wednesday 25th, the 5th, we will be hosting a general plan open house workshop to hear ideas from the community to guide Atascadero for the next 20 plus years. So this is where we look at all the zoning and the planning and the infrastructure that we need to accommodate what we're planning. It is a big deal. This sets forth a lot of not only what we're going to do with the city, but what you can and can't do, you know, with your property. If you've always thought about, hey, I live in a single family residential zone and I'd really like to split, this is kind of where you want to talk and do some of those things, or you don't want your neighbors to split. The general plan update for 2045 will lay the foundation for how infrastructure and community amenities can evolve to address housing, transportation, jobs, the economy, and sustainability. This workshop offers residences and businesses owners a unique opportunity to join the conversation and share the thoughts about how Atascadero can respond to community needs and aspirations for 20 to 25 years. This interactive event will let participants learn about the City of Atascadero General Plan update process and its importance to the city's future. It allows participants to review the existing context and key considerations developed from initial research and analysis, share their vision for Atascadero, discuss Atascadero assets and challenges together with ideas for change, identify ways to stay involved in the project. The open house workshop will be casual drop-in event. Registration is not required. Please come. If you're just curious, even if you're not curious, come anyways, please. I want as many people, the more people we hear from, the broader vision we have, the better information we have to plan our next 20 years. So please, 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 this is important. Next slide, Luke. Also important, and not to be confused with the general plan, I know they're going on very similar times, we also have a series of open houses for the Downtown Infrastructure Enhancement Project. This is our vision for El Camino Real from Morro Road all the way up to Rosario. A few years back, we had done a huge public input process and approved a plan that will put us on a road diet, one lane in each direction, and talked about some flex spaces in the middle. We had this general concept. Well, now we're starting to put some of the details to the plan. You're going to hear about a lot about it tonight, but I just wanted one more plug for the public. Please, we'd love to come hear from you on what's important to you. Which amenities are important? Why are they important? Which amenities are not as important? You know, what do you like? What do you not like? We have a whole tier team here tonight to kind of go through what that public outreach process will look like. We have a variety of dates and times. They are open house, so you can drop in at any time during that. It's not a 2-hour. You don't have to stay for 2 hours. You're welcome to stay for 2 hours, but it's a very individual process. So I wanted to put an extra plug in for that. You'll hear more tonight. Keep going. We also have strategic planning. Very busy time of year here. So mark your calendars for Friday, February 10th. It's going to be in the evening. I have not yet pinned down the times that we will start, but it'll start on Friday evening, and then we'll continue on Saturday morning, probably through early afternoon on Saturday, February 11th. And so it'll be Friday again, February 10th to Saturday, February 11th. And it's here at Historic City Hall in the council chambers. And we're going to be discussing such items as reviewing the city's guiding principles, missions and goals. We're going to discuss our priorities. These priorities in this session drive a lot of the budget to make sure that we're meeting those priorities. I'm sure we'll be discussing some of our successes over the last few years, what we still want to achieve, and that. So the public is welcome to attend all or any piece of strategic planning. We will have a more detailed agenda out soon so that people can know when we're going to be talking about each part. Next slide. A little bit more fun, or maybe not. Depends on who you are, right? We have our father-daughter dance. The father-daughter dance is definitely more adorable. Strategic planning's not usually adorable, but father-daughter dance definitely is. So we're inviting all dads and granddads to bring their special girl to our annual father-daughter sweetheart dance at the Pavilion on the Lake for an evening of music, dancing, refreshments, and more. This year's theme is Under the Sea, and the event will be held over 2 nights, February 3rd and Saturday, February 4th. Friday evening will be from 6:30 to 9:30 p.m. and is intended for girls ages 12 and under. And Saturday evening will be from 7 to 10 p.m. and is intended for girls ages over 12. Obviously, if you have two daughters, you can pick either one, which one works best for you, or you can either way too. Tickets for either evening can be purchased in person only at Colony Park Community Center on Traffic Way, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. These dances do typically sell out, so I do suggest you try and make your way over there to get those purchased. And we want to always thank our sponsors. Our presenting sponsors are H&R Block and Atascadero and Guest House Grill. And our in-kind sponsors are Sylvester's Burgers and All Signs and Graphics. For ticket pricing information, please call 470-3360 or go to visitatascadero.com/events. We have some more fun events. We have First Fridays coming up on February 3rd. Downtown is the place to be on the first Friday of each month. This next event will be a Sweetheart Stroll Sip and Shop, brought to you by the Atascadero Chamber of Commerce. Celebrate the new year and the beautiful spring season with our Sweetheart Stroll Sip and Shop. Enjoy phenomenal wine, beer, coffee, and other treats from 15 businesses in downtown. Bring your significant other, a date, or a group of friends and join the springtime fun. Tickets are available online until noon on February 3rd and then available at the event. Check-in booth locations can be found in front of Historic City Hall or at Central Coast Distillery to get your wine glass and wristband for the tasting. Event kicks off at 5:30 p.m. until 8 p.m. And also, as you shop downtown that evening, remember the local bonus program. For every $100 spent in the local community of Atascadero in February and March, excluding grocery, gas, and big box stores, you receive a $20 gift certificate. So go to atascaderochamber.org for more information on the Sip and Shop and the Shop Local Bonus Program.
But let me show you.
We have another event. Earthshine Creek Cleanup is in the process of being rescheduled. So Earthshine is a local volunteer group that works to help keep our Central Coast communities looking beautiful. They were originally returning to Atascadero on Saturday, February 11th, but due to the recent storms, we're having to postpone this event to another time that works in April or May. More to come. We definitely thank them for their efforts and for doing this. We appreciate all those that were willing to come out on February 11th, but hopefully we can still catch everybody when we schedule for April or May. Citizen Sales Tax Oversight Committee, mark your calendars for the next C-Stock Committee meeting, and this will be at the joint meeting with the Finance Committee and C-Stock together to go over not just the D20 expenditures, where we are, how's that revenue coming in, but also the whole entire audit and the general fund, really concentrating on that to build understanding of where your tax dollars go and try and be as transparent as possible. The meeting, as I said, so we invite everyone from the public to join. It's going to be February 23rd from 4 p.m. at 4 p.m. here at City Hall Council Chambers. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions the council may have.
Thank you, Ms. Ricker. Very thorough. A lot going on the fun and adorable side and the more serious side. Any questions for the city manager? All right. Thank you for the very robust, thorough report. All right. We will move on to community forum. This is the part of our agenda where if there's any members of the public who are wishing to speak on an item that is not on this evening's agenda, but over which the council has jurisdiction, we invite you to come talk to us, whether you're here in chambers and coming to the microphone. If you are on Zoom, you can raise your hand in the webinar. And when called on, please state your name for the record. Speakers will have up to 3 minutes, or 3 minutes total, and we will have a total of 30 minutes reserved for community forum. So with that, I will look for hands, and I'm seeing one in the webinar right now. So we will call on Brenda Mack.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, we can. You might want to speak just a little bit louder. You're slightly muffled.
Okay, I wish to speak on, I want to encourage the council to adopt the five-year plan, the homeless plan, the compact, the regional plan. And I also want to speak on, due to the last storms, I thought every city was supposed to have an emergency plan for dealing with homeless people. And I didn't see anything enacted in our city for the homeless, and I believe we still are in the rainy season. And so I think the council really needs to look at the liability issue that if we're not enacting our emergency plan for homelessness during states of emergency, what may occur? You may not get to throw these little parties if someone's lost their life because a plan was not enacted. But on the brighter side, I think the five-year plan is something that everybody needs to pull their weight, and we need everybody in agreement so nobody feels like one city is doing more for the homeless than the other city. And it is a crisis. It is a state crisis. It is becoming a national crisis. And that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Brenda Mack. Are there any other individuals wishing to speak here during community forum? Let me get over back over on Zoom to participants. We have a couple of attendees. Anyone or a few more attendees? Anyone else wishing to speak on a community forum? Raise your hand. And Luke, no one on the phone right now, correct? I'm not seeing anyone. Okay, anyone here in the chambers? All right, we'll go ahead and close community forum. And because we are open for a full 30 minutes, we will remain open until 6:49 p.m. And at this time, we will go ahead and move on to the next item. But if there is anyone who between now and 6:49 decides like, oh, there's something I wanted to say at community forum, go ahead and raise your hand. Let us alert us in here, and we will get to you at the earliest possible opportunity. And Ms. Mack, thank you very much for your comments. I know that Councilmember Funk works very strategically with the HSOC and the 10-year plan, the 5-year plan. There's a lot that will be coming forward to council in the future. So thank you for your comments. And with that, we will move on to we have one public hearing this evening that will actually be continued. It's the 2022 California Building and Fire Code updates. We still have some more work to do on that, but because it was noticed, I'm going to go ahead and open up public comment to see if there's any members of the public wishing to comment on this item. If you want to come forward or raise your hand in the webinar. I'm not seeing any, so I will go ahead and continue this item to February 14th. That'll be a great way to spend Valentine's Day, won't it? February 14th, 2023. And I see you, Director Dunsmore. Did you need to say something, or are we good?
We are good. Thank you so much. I'm just here in case you need me. Thank you. All
right. Thank you. Now we are on to a management report. This is our El Camino Real Downtown Infrastructure Enhancement Project Design Public Outreach Kickoff Session. That was a long intro, but something that we're very excited about, and this will be our Public Works Director, Mr. Nick DeBar, and I believe also assisting will be Ryan Betts. So, take it away, Director.
Thank you very much, Mayor Moreno. Actually, Ryan Betts is going to take a cold seat maybe tonight, but I will have our consultant, George Aguilar, and Sarah Huffman come up, and they're going to help me out with this presentation in a minute. All right, so a little background on this, and I'm not gonna, there's a lot of background on this. This is a project that's been occurring for the last 5 years. So I know last meeting we talked about the Santa Lucia Bridge and the Via Bridge and how long those take. This might be the second longest project that we're working on. I think this was born out of like trying to get some additional parking on El Camino to support the downtown businesses. So this was even before that 5-year period, probably like 10 years ago. But we did have a lot of preliminary engineering work done, and we came up with some concept plans 5 years ago and got an approval. But basically this El Camino Real Downtown Infrastructure Enhancement Plan, what is this? So it's basically a complete street design, and it's going to incorporate safe access for all users on the corridor. So pedestrian, bicycle, motorist, and all. The corridor is from 41 to Rosario. Really, the focus is safety, public safety, enhancing pedestrian and bicycle access to that corridor, and then also increasing the parking opportunities, providing safer sidewalks and crosswalks, and establishing placemaking in the downtown. I know in strategic planning in the past, we really talked about having a vibrant downtown and a place to come to and not drive through. So this is going to be something that would support those efforts. And then also, it's all about really public safety and economic development, you know, adding additional parking stalls, you know, supporting the downtown businesses, and then providing safer crosswalks, better lit streets, and all those. Some of the project objectives, I'm not going to go through all these, but I thought they were in the staff report. I thought I'd put them on there. But really, again, all these things come down to public safety and economic development. So as I mentioned, this process for the preliminary engineering or conceptual design started in 2017. We actually had a lot of traffic engineering done that was in this first phase, the concept phase. That was really a big part of that process. And we had some public outreach workshops. We had 12 total beginning in August 2018. And we had them virtually. That's when I think we had some virtual meetings in. But we did different venues. We went to farmers market. We had it here at City Hall. We had it at different times, morning, evenings, weekends. But through that outreach, we asked a lot of questions, open-ended questions, not necessarily, you know, rank in order, what do you like most about this or not. But a lot of that was really getting community concerns, getting input on what they like, what they didn't like. But one of the biggest concerns was the traffic, because this concept proposes to drop one lane of traffic in each direction on El Camino Real. So it'll be, you know, that gave a lot of people pause, especially folks that have lived here a long time. And ultimately, that concept plan was approved in August 2020. And I know it's impossible to see at this level, but I did put that concept plan on there. So this next phase started a little over a year ago when the city hired Wallace Group. We actually thank you to Senator Laird, who was able to get us $3 million towards this $6.5 million project. And so we decided to move ahead with that. But this process for final design is not really revisiting should we drop a lane in each direction, should we have better crosswalks, things like that. This is really to put together a final design, and then also prepare part of this effort that Wallace Group and their team is working on is preparing construction plans and specifications as well. Before that effort has started, they've done all the subsurface evaluations and explorations. They've done surveying. They've got a base plan going. And so we're at a really good point right now, but there's some things that we need to get input on from the community to finish up these plans so we can put it out for bid. Some of these things really include, what do you do with that excess space? As I mentioned, we're dropping a lane in each direction. And so we have a lot of excess space on this corridor and that 100-foot right-of-way. So how does the community want us to, you know, what kind of things do they want us to use there? So this effort, this item tonight is really to talk about those amenities along the corridor. So, you know, basically landscaping and trees, parking spaces, lighting, you know, how do you treat different pavement areas like in those center median or parking areas? Do you want it? It'd be nice to break up that sea of asphalt, maybe with some pavers or a different colored concrete or asphalt. You know, drop-off zones, we talked about that, you know, with DoorDash and those other things, or even just, you know, with aging community, like being able to drop off, you know, some seniors while you find a place to park. Bicycle parking and what we call street furniture, seating, benches, things like that. And then also, this provides an opportunity to potentially add some entrance signage or gateway features. So with that, I'm going to ask George and Sarah if they want to come up, and I'm going to have them talk about the three concepts that they came up with, the design team. And these concepts really aren't, the geometric layout is consistent with them also. You know, we have the same lanes, the same lane widths, but it's really those amenities, those corridor options and alternatives that we'd like to get input from the council on and the community.
Speak right here. So thank you, Nick. If we can go ahead and switch over to the next slide. As Nick was mentioning, my name's George Aguilar. I'm with Wallace Group. Here to my left is Sarah Huffman. She's our project manager. I'm the principal in charge for the team. And we have a very strong, robust team, traffic engineers, we have landscape architects, and of course, civil engineers focused on transportation projects. This is an exciting project. This is going to revitalize and increase the safety of this very important corridor for Atascadero. So we put some of our best people on this project, people who have a little skin in the game too, because Sarah lives here in town and she loves the downtown. So we're very excited to talk about some of the details. We can't cover all of the details, of course, but what I would like to say is, as a multidisciplinary team, we're looking at details that the public doesn't look at. So we have water lines and other utilities that we know you can't put a tree on top of because of root intrusions and other things. So that type of consideration is what's guiding some of the concepts that are thrown in on the screen here so that you can see it. We have a variety of different aspects that are similar and also some dissimilar aspects in each of the concepts. And the budget will eventually get fleshed out to what we can include in the concepts and what we must leave out. So our goal is to get feedback from the community and to understand what the priorities are so that recommendations can be made to the council. So with that introduction, I'm going to go ahead and pass it off to Sarah.
Thank you. And yes, like Nick was saying, we are certain parts of the project have already been established, such as the road diet and the flexible parking space in the center. And then up on the screen, we have a few additional items that are also consistent between all three concepts. And the different concepts were really developed to really garner as much input as we could from the public. So they feature a variety of different elements and different types of elements within each concept plan, but they are meant to be mixed and matched, and different parts of each concept could be put together to form what becomes the preferred concept that goes to final design and construction. So in addition to the road diet and the parking in the center, we're still preserving the parallel parking along the curb lane and putting in some bike facilities. It'll be class 2, which is a separated bike lane that's from Traffic Way to Rosario Avenue. And south of Traffic Way, it's going to be a class 3, which is a shared bike roadway, so cars and bikes together, but it will be a low speed environment. And then also at each pedestrian crossing that's not at a signalized intersection, we'll have pedestrian activated flashing beacons and signs. And especially at East Mall crossing, where we have a lot of students, really focused on safety there, putting in a pedestrian activated either signal or what's called a pedestrian hybrid beacon. And that will help improve safety for the pedestrians, but also help queue up the pedestrians so that cars have more availability and open space to go, especially during school drop-off and pickup times. In addition, we're also upgrading a few locations and sidewalks, driveways, and ramps to meet current ADA standards. And each one of these concepts includes streetscaping to some level. Concept 3 is what we're calling the greenest concept, so that has the most landscaping and amenities, but all three of them still have some level of planting. And then finally, the West Mall, we're looking at the traffic operations of the corridor for reducing it from 4 lanes down to 1 lane in each direction in order to maintain acceptable traffic operations, proposing to convert West Mall to one way, which would be in the opposite direction of East Mall and Entrada, which would really help the circulation of traffic through downtown. Go to the next slide, please. So the next three slides show each concept, and it's difficult to see at this scale, so come to our public outreach meetings in person so you can see the detail. But each one of these shows a full corridor and includes an isometric view of the Sunken Gardens area, the part in front of Sunken Gardens looking up towards Entrada, and also features pictures of the different elements that we are proposing. And like I said, people can pick and choose what they like, and we'll put together the ultimate concept based on the feedback from public and also what can be done feasibly with the budget that the city has. So if you want to step through the different concepts, concept one was the parking heavy, so parking with flexible space. So it's the most amount of parking. I should mention all three of these concepts add parking to downtown. The concept one is the most amount of parking, which is about a 93% increase, I want to say, as well as concept two is the mid concept. Can you go to the next one, please? It's called a mid concept with intersection medallions. So it's the middle of the road as far as number of parking spaces to amount of green space that's in the corridor. And it also features some cool intersection medallions with could be pavers or stamped concrete of some sort to really enhance the entry to the Sunken Gardens area. And then concept three, we've titled the Plaza Plan. And this has the fewest number of added parking spaces, but it's still close to 60% increase from existing parking conditions. And this has some plaza areas shown, the main plaza area being in front of Sunken Gardens and the plaza, but also some other smaller plaza areas as you go up the corridor. So we're proposing to show these three concept plans to the public during these meetings. And I think on the next slide, we have a summary table, which is also in the agenda packet. This shows basically the breakdown of the three different options, like I discussed. And within those, we have the different level of parking. And within the parking count, we've included short-term parking areas that could be used as loading zones, whether that's for pedestrians or passengers, commercial loading, or food delivery services. And then we're also looking at, really want to get feedback on the specific features that could be placed within the center parking area in addition to parking. So that would be seating such as benches, plantings, whether that's shrubs or potted trees or in-ground trees, bike parking, either bike lockers or bike racks. And then also looking at some gateway features, whether that's an entry arch or some smaller monument signs, and some nice lighting that will really make the downtown feel charming and inviting and just give a really nice sense of place. And also looking at some different options for pavement treatments, both within the center parking area and also at the crosswalks. Next slide, please. And so for the community outreach process, we're looking at the open house style like we talked about earlier. And at those meetings, we have five other posters that we didn't show today that go through the history of the project, showing the corridor as it was initially built versus what it will be like with this proposed design, and some other posters that show the overview of the concept, how it's been implemented in other cities in our area or in California. And then we have another set of posters that have example pictures of all the different amenities. So we're planning to use those posters with those three other roll plots that we just showed to walk the public through the different aspects of the project. And then we'll have staff facilitators there to lead the community through the different parts of the project and ask them qualitative questions such as what elements they liked or disliked and why. So So we really want to get as much feedback as we can that's more qualitative and not focus on rating anything as preferred versus not. And there's quite a few different options of when to come and where and how to attend. And I think, Nick, you might have that next one. I'll turn it back over to Nick. Thank you.
So there's a lot of information on these and, you know, detail that you can't really see, you know, on the screen here, but we'll have large printouts of these at the open houses. So so there are, in addition to tonight, I mean, we look at this meeting or this agenda item tonight as a kickoff for this public outreach. So there's 10 meetings scheduled, including tonight. They're at different times, different you know, options for, you know, there's some virtual options in here for people to attend if they like. In-person options, you know, morning, afternoon, evening, weekend. I think there's a weekend. Yep, there's a Saturday, February 4th in there. Even Valentine's Day, you know, if you'd like to come here after the council meeting or during the day. There's one from noon to 2 o'clock, so I mean that's a nice lunch date. You know, you can come here to attend this. But the Zoom information meeting is right there, and there's, you know, there's a lot of advertising for this that has gone out, and Terry Banish has also been involved in that. So we're really trying to get the word out, and you know, again, not to be confused with the general plan update, you know, because there's a lot of those meetings going on right now too. But in general, those are happening earlier than these, so these don't start till next Tuesday. So really the recommendation we're looking at tonight is for council to provide input and receive information from the public on outreach concepts for the El Camino Downtown and Infrastructure Enhancement Plan. And I can pull up, I've got the full three concepts available if we need to pull those up during questions or if you want to look at any of that. So with that, I can turn it back to you, Mayor Moreno.
Okay, thank you, Director. My understanding is that as a council, we're not giving that same public input tonight. We're wanting to hear from the public, and any of the five of us can attend one of those public input meetings and give our input as, you know, as residents. We don't want to sit here tonight, the five of us, and say, oh, here, this is what we want to do, and then go rubber stamp it by the public. That's not the point of this. The point is we want all of you involved in helping to design what our downtown is going to look like for decades to come. This is a place where we can all be coming together, having more events and activities, and really that nice kind of hometown feel of our downtown and the safety of it, the parking, all of it. We want you involved. Director, my understanding also is that somebody doesn't have to come for the full 2 hours. They can come, see the information, provide their input, and then be off. Is that correct?
That is absolutely correct. So we're going to have a lot of facilitators at these workshops or open houses, I should call them. And so, yeah, you know, we'll be one-on-one attention and one-on-one Q&A at the end. So I think somebody could get in there, and if they're really efficient with their time, they could get in and out of there probably in 20 minutes.
Okay. 20 minutes for the future of our downtown. Let's all commit to that. But seriously, we do. We want your input. This is a really exciting project, and we want us all to be a part of it. With that, I will look to council for any questions you have about this process. Again, not getting down into nitty-gritty details of the concepts, because we can do that individually at any of these meetings. So I will just look at the cameras here and see if I see any little hands, sort of. Mayor Pro Tem Funk.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. It's very exciting to see this move forward to this stage. A couple of questions. As we're looking at the different options, if somebody's coming to one of these sessions and they care passionately about three or four of the things, but they really don't, I mean, maybe they're really interested in the lighting, but they don't so much care about what the bike racks look like, can people just give the input on the items that they care about and pass on the others.
Absolutely, and the questions that we'll be asking them will really address that. You know, it's not something that we say, hey, what do you think about, you know, drop-off zones? And they're like, well, if they don't care about that, they don't need to comment on it. So we're really looking at what do people really find interesting and like about it and what they dislike. So, yeah, they do not have to comment on the whole concept.
For planning the particular feedback on things like the drop-off zones and the bike transit, have we done specific outreach to Uber Eats drivers and Uber drivers and folks like, you know, that are doing that kind of work in town already and have some idea of how that works, and also to our cycling community?
We have not yet addressed or reached out to those groups specifically. But we sure can. If there's a way that we can do that, we'd love to. And as I mentioned, Terry Banish is going to be helping us get the word out as well.
Would we be able to maybe put something with our about this, a handout to our local restaurants for them to hand to their to any drivers that pick up food in the next period?
I think we have, and I'm looking to the city manager, but I believe we have some handouts on these meetings and just trying to encourage. So I'm guessing that city staff and including the planning department will probably be reaching out to a lot of the businesses in the downtown and trying to get everybody excited about these open houses.
Great. And just the, you know, drop-off zones are a pretty arcane piece of thing, and we need to be talking to people who practically work in that to get that perspective. As we look at some of the options, including lighting, will it be possible, assuming that we could fund this over time, to extend some of these options up Entrada, up Traffic Way, and potentially into the Colony Square area so that we increase the feeling that all of downtown is one space?
Absolutely. And if you look at some of the lighting, there's different hues or what they call Kelvin. So sometimes there's a warm light, almost looks yellow, and other lights are, like in our parking lot here at City Hall, it's more bright. You know, we wanted that more for safety. One of the things that this plan and all these concepts are going to address is making a consistent hue with the street lighting and making sure it all works together. And back to your question, yes, it could easily be expanded down in Trotter, Traffic Way, or other places on the corridor.
Okay. And does the same hold for the street trees or plantings that are done in containers?
Could
be a little more complicated, but.
Are they more complicated or can they be expanded?
Can some of these design ideas that people are looking at potentially be extended into the parts of downtown that intersect with El Camino Real?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's, you know, we want to have a consistent looking downtown as much as we can, and it would be very easy to expand those concepts into, intersecting corridors in the future. Not with this project. Construction is very expensive, and right now we want to focus on this corridor, set a base for the rest of it, and I think that's a great idea as we find funding or grant opportunities to really look at that. It would be great.
Sure. What I particularly wanted to know is that if there are things, some of these choices that would preclude that, that would be important information for people to know that this can only be done in this area and not really for whatever engineering or practical means not be done in some of the other areas.
I think all these amenities could be expanded outward, you know, with exception of maybe that Plaza Rambla area, because that's really unique to El Camino Real because of the excess space and the 100-foot right-of-way, 80-foot pavement, curb to curb. So no other streets really have that. So that would be the only unique aspect to this project.
And I've seen the mention in a few places of Rambla areas. That's not something we're used to seeing around town. So could you define that for folks?
Sure. It's kind of, it sounds, I think it's Spain. It came out of Barcelona or something. But it's kind of like those plaza areas that are really geared towards like really pedestrian and bicycle movements and multi-use areas. You know, it's just, it could be used for events, things like that. Really a flex space, if you will. And, you know, markets or farmers market or whatever else. So, I mean, there's a lot of different things, but really the bottom line is it's really geared towards pedestrians and pedestrian activities.
So would the space that we create, the plaza space we created outside of La Plaza that connects El Camino to the pedestrian tunnel, would that be considered a Rambla?
No, not necessarily, because vehicles aren't allowed in there, and you know, it just doesn't have the same flex space. Plus, it's not in a street. It, you know, a lot of these are meant to be surrounded by streets. So, let me go back. Our city manager might have seen these in Europe, maybe.
The Rambla is the area in the middle of the street where we are potentially parking vehicles or can be used and closed down. So it's not available for parked vehicles, but for event space. So the Rambla spaces are those flex spaces in the middle of the street.
Okay. And with these kinds of spaces, if they are used for parking, is that something that could be blocked off for Colony Days or Tamale Festival or something where there are going to be great floods of folks around town?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the things is, you know, the parades that we have for Colony Days or Cruise Night and those things. So Cruise Night might actually, I'm looking at the police chief, but that might almost make things a little simpler in this corridor because, I mean, they always do merge down to one lane and go down Entrada, so this might help make that a little more efficient movements. Colony Days Parade, I mean, obviously it's a very, very wide road right now, but, you know, that's one of the things that we'll have to look at, and I'm confident they can still have their parade on this corridor.
Oh, yeah. Okay, thank you.
I will point out on the staff report that there is on page 27, we talk about, you know, all residents invited, the downtown merchants, like really who we're doing the outreach to, schools, churches, ECHO, other proximate groups, and possibly to Mayor Pro Tem Funk's point with Uber Eats, maybe the Chamber of Commerce, you know, has some connections with those folks. So making sure far and wide we get as many people involved in the process. Other council questions? Councilmember Darris.
Just one quick question, because I noticed on the summary chart that you have for the three different concepts, I didn't see anything to mention in the discussion that I had on public transportation. Bus stops, are there going to be added bus stops? Are they relocated? And how is this corridor going to be affected by that? Or how is it going to be affected by the corridor?
Right. And currently, we'll reach out to RTA. RTA is the scheduled stops on El Camino, so that's not dial ride, but they do have input into where they prefer to have these bus stops, but I don't anticipate those bus stop locations moving at this point.
Okay, so where they're currently located, it's all still going to work right into the plan.
Right. So right now, corridor, I'm trying to think, there's one southbound at across from the police station, and then there's another one right just north of La Plaza by the 805 board shop, and then I'm trying to think, there's maybe one more southbound, those are the two, and then northbound there's one just north of Trafficway by the Carlton parking lot, and then there's another one right in front of the police station. I think there's, I
Okay, there's more than I thought there was, but yeah, I'm just, you know, because this is obviously, we want to make this a very pedestrian friendly, and having bus stops nearby would be certainly helpful. So, all right,
correct.
Thank you.
Yeah. It will be, one nice thing is the crosswalks are going to be much nicer to cross. You know, they'll be well lit, they'll be enhanced crosswalks. So, I mean, crossing, you know, if you are riding the bus, it, I mean, that's one of the things you always have to cross either in the morning or at night. So,
any other council questions? I'm not seeing any. One that I had, Sarah had mentioned, you know, West Mall potentially becoming, or yeah, West Mall. anyone else, East Mall, West Mall, we're like, okay, which is which? West Mall becoming one way and adding parking. And I know that's been talked about over the years. Are those spaces, the added spaces, with diagonal parking included in these numbers, or is that those are included? Okay. I'm seeing
they are,
the city
they
manager
are,
nod. In
those
the
numbers are included in
okay.
that chart.
Okay, thank you. So with that, what we're going to do is I'm going to open up public comment, and this is your opportunity, one of 10. If you are here with us tonight, or if you're on the, oops, I think I somehow lost my... Oh, here we go. Okay, I lost it for a moment. Now I'm back. If you're here on the webinar and you would like to give any input, you can go ahead and raise your hand, and then will we kind of go through the questions with that individual. So it will be a little bit more of an interactive public comment. So if you would like to give your feedback this evening, you are more than welcome to do that. And I would ask you to raise your hand, or if you're here in the chambers and want to come forward, please do that. Don't be shy. I'm not seeing anyone in the chambers come forward. I'm not seeing any hands on the webinar. So if you would like to, please go ahead and raise your hand, or we will be closing public comment this evening. Okay, I'll go ahead and close public comment. And again, really encourage all of you, look at your calendars, find, you know, give yourself a good half hour and calendar that and make it a commitment to either come in person, be virtual, and go through with someone one-on-one and give your feedback. We want this to be all of us together, all of our input, so it really is a community space that we've all helped to create. With that, I'm going to ask you, Director DeBar, is there anything further that you need from us this evening?
No, I don't believe so. I think we're, if you have any comments on any of the items or anything, but you know, I think there's been a lot of effort put into this by not just Public Works, but city manager, community development. We've got a great design team. I mean, I really think highly of not just Wallace Group, but Kittleson and KTUA. And I mean, we've got some really talented people working on this. And I think when this project is done and we get it constructed, it's going to be pretty fantastic.
I agree wholeheartedly. I think we're all looking forward to it. It's exciting that we're at this point. George and Sarah, thank you for being here and for all of your work on it. And I love that you're living here, Sarah, and invested in it yourself. So thank you. All right, we are going to move on to our, let's see what we have next. Our management report number 2, which is our fiscal year audit 2021-2022, and this will be our it's funny, it says the public works director. I'm like, no, that is incorrect. It will be our administrative services director, Jerry Rangel.
Thank you so much.
That was a surprise to Nick, right?
Wait just a moment to pull up the PowerPoint. All right, here we go. So thank you so much, Mayor and Council. I'm very pleased to present to you tonight the 21-22 audited financial statement report. The independent firm of Moss, Levy & Hartsheim was hired to perform the audit work. Mr. Adam Geis, a partner with the firm, is on with us virtually tonight and can address any questions you have. The audit was conducted in accordance with auditing standards generally accepted and standards applicable to financial audits contained in the government auditing standards. The auditors issued an unqualified opinion, meaning that the financial statements were presented fairly and in compliance with accounting principles. Tonight's focus will be on the general fund. Fiscal year 21-22 performed much better than expected coming out of COVID. The lingering COVID effects were not as pronounced as anticipated. Some positive one-time and ongoing revenue enhanced the bottom line, along with moderated operational costs. Overall, the city performed well. Council, community, and staff will all have the opportunity in the coming months to discuss the financial strategy and the updated 7-year forecast and the next 2-year budget. I encourage everyone to stay tuned for information on opportunities on how to participate and provide input. The audited financial statements includes the sales tax measure F14 activity in the general fund as required for legal and accounting purposes. It will be separated out tonight, though, for discussion purposes. At the start of the fiscal year, in accordance with the council's long-term fiscal policies, the adopted budget anticipated the use of about $1.9 million in general fund reserves, adjusted for encumbrances here. The year concluded with a net change in fund balance of about $8.3 almost million. This is a positive variance of $10 million. The top revenue sources for fiscal year 21-22 came from property tax, sales tax, ARPA funding, TOT, and development. Property tax continued steady with an increase over the prior year of about 4%. This is the first year that we've received the full year of Measure D20 funds, which came in at about $6.2 million, and combined with the Bradley Byrne sales tax, total sales tax was about $11.4 million. During fiscal year 21-22, the city received half of the coronavirus state and local fiscal recovery funds. That amount was about $3.6 million. The remaining half was received in the current year, fiscal 22-23, and will be reflected as revenue in the current year. As you may recall, this funding approved through the Federal American Rescue Plan Act is to provide additional financial relief in the wake of the pandemic. Atascadero was qualified to take advantage of the standard allowance for revenue loss. So these funds can be used for general government purposes and are included in the general fund. This is a one-time federal backfill of revenue that hits 2 city fiscal years. Another great news item is the TOT revenue. TOT revenue broke the $2 million mark for the first time ever, and it recovered from COVID much more quickly than we expected. This was up from last year, up from about 1.4 from last year. We continue to see the impact of Council's focus on economic development as development-related revenues held steady this year at about $1.4 million. A few other items are worth noting as well. Zoo revenues, including admissions, education, zoo gift shop, special events, all of these were up about 9% over the prior year. This increase is still likely due to some COVID impacts and doesn't necessarily set the trend for the future, but it sure does give us a positive lift for this year. Government accounting standards require that the city report investments at their fair market value on the last day of the reporting period. It's the city's policy to hold investments to maturity except under certain circumstances. Therefore, the gain or loss that's reported as an adjustment is typically not even realized. The loss reported in the 21-22 financial statements was about $703,000. However, since the city will hold these investments to maturity, This adjustment will not be recognized and is expected to fluctuate with the market. The general fund expenditures were about $23.7 million in total. Employee services were less than expected due to unfilled vacancies, primarily in the police department, as they worked to getting fully staffed. Operating costs came in fairly close to the original budget. The categories of special purchases and capital outlay were less than originally budgeted due to a number of projects that were ongoing at the end of the fiscal year. These projects will continue into the current fiscal year 22-23. This means that those remaining amounts that were committed for these ongoing projects are now included in the fiscal year net and also in the general fund reserve. A handful of these larger projects include what you see on the screen, the general plan update, the CAD RMS upgrade, Fire Station 1, broadband enhancement, and the radio repeater upgrade, among others. While tonight's discussion is really focused on the general fund excluding Measure F-14, I do want to touch on F-14 briefly. Measure F-14 revenue came in at about $3.2 million, with expenditures coming in at about $3.4 million. The balance in these, the F-14 column, are funds that are being used on current and future projects. Total general fund ending balance, including both the F-14 and D-20 sales tax measures, as reported in the financial statements, was $25.3 million. Excluding Measure F-14 activity, general fund reserves were just over $21 million. As stated, as a percent of the general fund expenditures, reserves are at 76% for the fiscal year. Now, for many reasons, this fiscal year has been one of the city's brightest. We've had some really nice one-time funding that boosted our bottom line, along with better-than-expected revenue in a lot of categories. Our general fund reserves are better than ever currently. What does this all mean? As I touched on earlier, council, community, and staff will be meeting in the coming months to discuss this and the updated financial strategy and the 7-year forecast and try to figure it all out. We'll have to remember that this general fund reserve total includes many of the projects that have been planned and committed but have not yet been completed. Earlier, I discussed some of the projects that were budgeted in 21-22 will roll forward into the current year and future if needed. Additionally, we have things like the prior item, the downtown infrastructure enhancement project, that will come out of the general fund reserve as well. Staff will analyze the data to understand what the underlying trends are, which will aid our discussions for the 23-25 budget, and how much we can anticipate to spend on those one-time items or to fund ongoing items. Net pension liability is always a big item of discussion. The city is a member of the California Public Employees Retirement System, or CalPERS, and offers retirement benefits to its employees. The city's CalPERS retirement plans are grouped with other similar agencies into what we call pools. The city's net pension liability is affected not only by city-specific factors, but also the activity of those pools. At the end of the year, the city's net pension liability was about $18.9 million. This is a decrease of roughly $12 million over the prior year. The largest part of the decrease was the great investment returns in fiscal year 2021. CalPERS assets earned 21.3 that year. This better-than-expected investment return triggered a discount rate reduction, however, from 7% to 6.8% that will be effective for us in fiscal year 23-24. That, along with CalPERS investment returns for 21-22 at negative 6.1%, will impact our future NPL and city contributions toward those unfunded liabilities. And there's one error that was discovered after the audit was delivered in the agenda package. It's on page 46 of the document. The item under municipal securities, it's $305,777, was mistakenly listed under the not rated category. It actually is, all of those investments are rated and should be under the category that is now labeled AAA through A, and the category title was changed for that. And I think that completes my report, and I'm happy to answer any questions. And again, Mr. Geis is available for questions as well.
Thank you, Director. So I think what we're hearing about the general fund reserve is, while it certainly, you know, beats the alternative of, you know, being down or thinking, you know, coming out of COVID, there were so many concerns and we didn't know what might happen. But we shouldn't get excited that there's all of this, you know, extra money, because it is really being set aside for different things, like you said, that were budgeted but not, you know, we didn't go ahead and purchase those. We don't accrue for them because we're not under, you know, we don't use accrual method so for these kind of financial statements. So they will come in the next year. And so we've got, you know, a few million dollars, plus you look at the downtown infrastructure enhancement. So that will all come out of that $21 million.
Yes, that is correct.
Yeah, okay. I want us to be really clear about that. Otherwise, it kind of looks like, what are you all talking about? that we don't have money for XYZ. We have it, and it's set aside for those very important things that we as a community have all decided are important for us. So with that, I will look to council for any questions. Wow. All right. No questions. All right. We're out of here.
I asked my questions earlier.
No, that, well, and just to preface this, the audit is something, you know, we're looking back at fiscal year 21-22. And, you know, we all sit down with the city manager and, you know, sometimes the director and get our questions answered. But really, there's nothing to be done with the audit. Of course, we've got Adam, the partner online, who can answer any questions, but this is simply a look back and us receiving this information. Again, there's nothing to be done with it. So with that, if there are any specific questions, but I don't suspect we have a huge conversation to be had. Council Member Funk.
I would ask one question, and that's, I was looking in the statements for the $3 million that Senator Laird procured from us. I see the write-off for the redevelopment loans that was taken, and in lieu of that being directly repaid, he got us $3 million instead of the 1.4 that was on the books. But I didn't see that here. Is that a timing issue that check came in after the 1st of July, and so it'll show up next year?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, that was September of this year, I believe. So look forward to seeing that. Any other questions? I'm not seeing any. I will go to the public. Anyone here wishing to speak? I'm seeing shaking of heads. Anybody on the webinar wishing to ask a question, anything? Adam, you are more than welcome to come on if there's anything that you want to say. This is probably the... Let's see. No, the last couple of years you've got to come virtually. I always felt bad because we do this at the end of the evening, and then you're sitting here waiting sometimes through a very long meeting. So I'm so glad you can join us virtually. But feel free to
That's
come
okay.
On.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay. Yeah, I just since I'm here, I just wanted to point out that I'm really appreciative of the city staff and management that work with us throughout the year. When we come out to do our field work and help provide all of the hundreds of papers of documentation and checks and payroll and receipts and everything that we go through, including other departments that we go at and look at their receipts. I'm happy to report that there is a letter at the end of the audit that has one suggestion that we had on cash receipts. To make sure that when when receipt amounts or rates are changed, that they get properly updated in the system right away, and to check those rates. But of everything that we looked at, that was the only item that we had a recommendation on. So the city's financial controls and systems appear to be working very strong.
Thank you very much. And we're glad to know that as wonderful as Jerry is, she's not perfect. Because I've kind of thought for many years, so it's nice when there's one tiny little thing, you're like, all right, she's human. Thank you very much. I will go ahead and close public comment. And I want to just a real thanks to our Administrative Services Department Director, your whole team. You're so professional and really attention to detail, which you need in that position. And, you know, having been an auditor myself, I know what this process is to go through. And so it's a lot of detail, a lot of, you know, tying out, being specific, looking at things, you know, explaining what's happened and tracing, you know, tracking things down, chasing down answers even from other departments. So thank you for all that you and your team do. You do a great job. All right, and with that, I think we are simply receive and accept and file on that. So if there's no other questions, we will move on. I think we are to council announcements and committee reports. So I'm going to start with our incredibly talkative council member this evening, Newsom. She took herself off mute.
I'm scared to take myself off mute because everybody walks into the room about this time. I actually have nothing to report, neither does Abigail.
Thank you. Councilmember Darris.
Oh, let's see. Last week on Thursday, Cap Slow met. Just business as usual. One of the things that was updated was probably more interesting than the rest was a point system for qualified individuals and how the selection is. And they just changed it up a bit. And I thought that was interesting. And anyway, that just got updated. So it was just regular stuff there. And then tomorrow morning, APCD meets. And this will be my first meeting in person with the group. So we'll pass COVID and don't have to do Zoom. So that'll be good to see everybody in person. So that's tomorrow morning. And that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Borbo.
Yes. At the last Integrated Waste Management Authority meeting, I completed my time as president of the board. So now I have the luxurious position of past president. But still a member of the executive committee. And Jan Marks from the city of SLO is now the president of the board. So it was a very busy time while I was president of the board with many, many issues for the IWMA to deal with. And I feel like we've come a long way in the last year and a half. So so that we feel good about that.
It feels like you were president of the IWMA for 3 years. Is it just me?
It felt like it, yes. My wife accused me of secretly taking a full-time job.
Well, we thank you again for that. Mayor Pro Tem Funk.
Thank you. And I made the strategic error of being willing to be reelected for a third year to chair the Homeless Services Oversight Council. So I will be doing that. We've got a great team. The vice chair will be Councilmember Steve Gregory from Paso Robles, that many of you may know. And so ATSOC met this past week on Wednesday. We have a lot of new members, so it's a very lively group. We spent some time looking at homelessness in the storm. We tasked the ATSOC Services Committee to do a deeper dive into that, to incorporate some of the learnings into the county's disaster plan, and that maybe lessons coming out of that for cities as well as to what things work particularly well and which things could use some work in the storm. But that it did include opening up a warming center in Paso Robles on about 24 hours notice. Which was supported. They've been able to get transportation in Paso with a van going around Paso and getting folks out of the places where they were known to be congregating and into safety and shelter that way. So 40 Prado ran way over with maybe another 46 people in the parking lot. in sheltered there, and with overflow going to a Five Cities Homeless Coalition that was running the South County shelter. So there's a real concerted effort to find some places, but keep in mind that we have a gap every night of about 1,000 people more that are homeless than we have any kind of shelter for. So we're nibbling at the edges of that in these events, but there's still a lot of folks out there finding some place as a port in the storm. The council, we had a attended a an event, a town hall meeting with Congressman Panetta and Assemblymember Addis. And at that, she mentioned that she's interested in doing legislation that would maybe expand the Project Room Key for disaster events so that we have a way to take advantage of existing shelters, existing rooms available immediate basis, and get people into them in a way that would be quicker and safer. The other main thing coming up out of HSOC is something I previewed with this group, that we are pressing each one of the cities and the county to prioritize homelessness at some level in the council priorities this year, because we are the county's moving really hard and fast to implement the five-year plan to cut homelessness in half. And that includes having a regional compact where we can get some better targets and city by city and really get things better figured out. And negotiating that is going to be part of the planning cycle over the next year or two. So we want to have our staff engaged on our behalf and to be planning for what our city needs, even though we're not going to be the ones paying for it necessarily, but we need to give guidance as to what should be happening here. So to that end, I did speak to the Board of Supervisors this morning on behalf of HSOC and asked them to, at that level, make homelessness their top priority and to continue to do that. And they did do exactly that. Well, thank you.
Thank you. Let's see. I had a SLOCOG meeting. One of the things that I'll just let council know is, and probably not surprised, but several members on SLOCOG have been talking for a while since, you know, measure, it was M16 in 2016, failed. And that was a countywide transportation tax that needed a two-thirds vote. And it was on our agenda to move forward with doing a survey for a sales tax measure. And I voted against it, and my concern is that, particularly with measure, our own F-14 needing to renew that if we had competing measures, whether it's in 2024 or 2026, that F-14 could suffer as a result. And I'm not willing to make that trade-off. That is our priority. I understand regional needs, but there is that put your own mask on first, and our own mask for our roads is measure F-14, and that is my priority. Something interesting, the 4146, the why, we got $60 million in new funding, which is fantastic, and they expect that to be usable by December 2024 and fully constructed by December 2025. So we'll see if that's actually comes out that way, but I was kind of shocked when we were given those dates. At RTA, I was told that unfortunately the information I received about the Farebox recovery or relief being, you know, like 3 years out. No, it's 2023. But then, of course, we've got the 3 years before we're penalized, so there's time to be having that conversation. And then I do want to thank staff as well as Congressman Panetta, Senator Laird, and Assemblywoman Addis. Came out a week ago Saturday, and the city manager and myself and Ryan Betts from Public Works took them around town to several of the places, as many as we could, to show them the damage that happened not only on city properties, but also just kind of driving by, being able to show them some of the areas on private property that we suffered. And I know them coming not just to Atascadero, but throughout our county was instrumental in their advocating for that disaster declaration. So the fact that we got that a week ago today is so important, not just for the city, but for all of you in terms of individual assistance. So I want to thank them for their efforts on our behalf and on behalf of our entire county. With that, I will ask if there's any individual determinations or
I
actions.
I have just one very quick one.
Yes.
And I apologize. We're getting out fairly early. So I wanted to take the opportunity to really recognize the heroic effort that our public works staff, our police, our fire, our finance department, Laura, Terry, everybody did in the storm and are continuing to do. These people worked incredible hours out there in the pouring rain, trying to assess, make roads safe, clear city culverts, trying to do that, answering the phones. We got inundated. I know a lot of the times we all remember to recognize our police and fire heroes, our public works heroes who were sitting there honestly working incredible, being creative, reacting in the emergency. Wastewater. We don't think about wastewater in a storm, but we went from 1.2 gallons to 4.5 million gallons, 1.2 million to 4.5 in that storm, trying to make sure our ponds didn't overflow, that we didn't have environmental disasters. I was really proud to be a part of the city of Atascadero. So I just wanted to take this moment just to say that. So thank you.
Yes, we all of us agree wholeheartedly. We have an amazing staff, hardworking, a tremendous team, and we thank all of you. And I've heard thanks from so many members of the public as well for the work, for the support, just the responsiveness. It's been incredible. So thank you all. And with that, meeting adjourned.